So then jumping ahead maybe a little to 1975, then to the desegregation plan and busing, and where were you teaching at that point?
Where was that at first year? Okay, I think that first year I was not teaching. I was working as a staff development person with the Follow Through program. Follow Through was a federal program. You remember Follow Through?
Mm-mm, no.
Follow Through, Head Start was several years old. And there were colleges that created various programs that would follow through from Head Start.
Right.
And our model was a behavior analysis model out of the University of Kansas. And so I taught using that model for about 2 years in a second grade classroom and then became a staff trainer. So it seems to me when I was a staff trainer, we had an office downtown, and that was the year of the violence
mm-hmm.
with busing. So I wasn't in a school,
mm-hmm.
in a particular school, but of course I was here and the atmosphere was volatile,
mm-hmm.
Especially in the south end of Louisville.
Mm-hmm. How did it directly affect you?
Well, only in that my work with the teachers was maybe stressful,
mm-hmm.
but that's about it, because I didn't have anybody personally involved. It was just hearing the news and trying to figure out how am I going to work with people and how they're feeling and
mm-hmm.
How the kids doing and. There's a wonderful woman whom I met not long ago who said that she has a great story about how she and parents went to the South End and made some demands because of the treatment of the students out there. And I did not know that that was going on. I mean, I didn't know that that was doing that.
I think I talked to her.
Did you?
Benita Ellis?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm so glad you did. She,
yeah.
I knew the story later, but at that time I didn't know what she was doing. But they did some wonderful work, because the kids didn't expect to be treated like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they didn't expect such ugliness from other parents. Oh, these are adults. Why are they acting like that? But it was a wake-up call from Boston. See, because Boston's foolishness was going on right before that, I believe. And Louisville had always integrated rather peacefully. You know, the 54 thing was, there was not a lot of violence. There was none that I knew of. May have been ugliness, but I didn't know of it. When the city system opened, open enrollment
mm-hmm.
for high schools, you could go anywhere you could get to. That may have been a problem because blacks may have been in such the minority that may have been an issue, but I know several did decide to go out to other schools. And then we had that great merger
mm-hmm.
Between the city and the county, which I'm really grateful, because we don't have any of this stuff that other school districts have, where the county is rich and the city is poor, and we have one school system
mm-hmm.
for the entire county, and so there's accountability at every school. And it also allows us to continue a deseg plan where other districts have long ago abandoned those plans. As a matter of fact, the plan was recently upheld.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the family's taken it to the Supreme Court, and we'll see.
Right.
Well, they say they are,
oh,
the McFarland
right.
case.
But so you see a link, a definite link then between city-county merger and the implementation
definitely.
Of the busing plan.
Definitely. And I think even now that we have Metro government, There you have folk at the table of metro government who represent every part of the city. Now, if there were people who disagreed, thinking that the west end of the city would not be well represented, but still, yeah, looking at the whole, in my opinion, it's the merger of the city and county school systems that have saved this community.
Mm-hmm. So do you see the integration plan then as it worked out in Louisville as being a success?
The school integration plan?
Yeah.
Well, I do. I think there, you know, you could analyze it in a lot of different ways, but I do. I think, you know, you open ideas to everybody. You learn about people, their friends across races mm-hmm. and geographical areas. And I think poor people have learned, have seen what's possible. I think some people have run from it and gone to other counties for whatever reason. I think teachers have become better teachers. They have had to be, because some of the kids who are poor have fewer resources to grab when it comes mm-hmm. to their learning. So it takes some better, harder teaching. I think people have come to say, okay, yeah, we're different. So what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and it's been a struggle, though, and it's not over, because this stuff, all this other stuff is in the home. You know, it's hard to get rid of that
mm-hmm.
home stuff. But still.
In terms of what people are taught
mm-hmm.
in the home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But I think it's been good for the community. It's interesting now, as you know, for the last several years, to just walk in a restaurant, nobody pays attention to you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can remember as a young child cringing, thinking, you know, somebody was going to say something, or I was somehow less than.
Mm-hmm.
But it's nice.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We still have a long way to go, but I just think it's a human thing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think people don't like each other a lot of times, just as people. I don't know what that's about.
Do you see the schools as actively still involved in trying to work out new solutions and to keep this?
Well, I think
improving
the,
this.
I think the fact that there are a lot of things the school system does that are one of those. And this was before No Child Left Behind. Our state was disaggregating data, test data, by subgroups long before No Child Left Behind. So that when I left, and this was a big change, because the words were never said. These are the words that were not said. This is a question that was not asked. Why does this group score lower than this group?
Mm-hmm.
It was very quiet. It's like, you didn't say the words, why? But every time you start talking, you know, you get better. So toward maybe 10 years ago, when this Kentucky Education Reform Act began, and the data that came back to the schools on test scores was disaggregated by various subgroups,
mm-hmm.
then, you know, there it is. You got to talk. Now, why is this group reading at this level and this group reading at this level? So now we're into new talk,
mm-hmm.
and it's gotten more and more. It's now the feds are saying,
mm-hmm.
you've got to look at your data by subgroups, and we're going to score you and analyze you based on how well you achieve for all your groups of children. So, I mean, this is the new day, because you've got this issue of blacks scoring lower on test scores everywhere. It's
mm-hmm.
not just in Louisville, Kentucky. It's everywhere.
Right.
So, you know, you've got to talk about
thought it might be Reverend Cosby.
No, he hasn't called.
It's just my brother. It's not important.
Well,
later.
Maybe he'll call. I hope he calls. So, I mean, I think this is the next thing. Mm-hmm. So in our district, the board has decided, well, we could, you know, you could really end the whole controversy of subgroup differences at each school if you had segregated schools in some cases. For instance, at the last school I was in, it was a very high-income area, but the kids who were brought in were from a very low-income area, so they walked in like that.
Right.
So this achievement gap issue was very, very difficult, you know, because will you ever do this or will you do this, you know?
We're both go up at the same
time. We're both go
time.
Up, because you really don't want this group to come down.
Right.
And you want this group to get up, but the deficit in terms of travel and language and money and all that was so wide. So you hear a lot of talk now more about gain than gap.
Mm-hmm.
But still, the scores, being able to have the discussion about the scores, and everybody being able to say black, white, ESL group, this group, ECE group. I mean, everybody could talk about it without...
When you were principal, were those conversations were not happening or weren't able to happen yet?
Well,
quite at that point.
They just didn't happen. For a long time, we didn't have disaggregated data.
Mm-hmm.
So you couldn't quite see by group.
Mm-hmm.
When we weren't sophisticated enough with, I wasn't, and I don't think many were, in terms of getting the raw data and then separating out. Now, what we started doing the last couple of years, well, before Kira, was seeing which teachers had which kids and looking at gain in terms of did that teacher do anything this year with these kids. And we still need to do that. But basically what matters is, a second thing happened, teaming. So that you ended up with a child who maybe had three or four teachers in elementary school. One taught the reading, one taught the math, one taught the social studies. So it became even more complicated without your computer savvy and without real statistical knowledge to really disaggregate that data. But then it started coming in. When it started coming in, then we could easily see what was happening with groups of kids. Now the movement now, which and then but better, is to see what's happening with individual kids over time by aggregate and disaggregating the groups at the same time. So you got this group of kids and how are they doing as a group and individually. And then you can kind of back it up to Miss Jones and say, what happened all year, you know? What can we do to change this? So it's getting better. But the conversations were not there out loud around the table.
Now, for when you, the last school at which you were principal and you had these kids that were coming in at this lower level, what kind of special concerns did you have about them or strategies at that point for trying to bring them up?
Lots of concerns. A concern was, I hate to say this, but it's true, behavior. Because these kids would all get off the bus together, angry about something. So maybe the first thing we had to do, I felt, was make them feel comfortable coming miles out of their environment. And once they did, then they were comfortable. But then making them know that you don't have to take up for yourself here. We are your support structure, so you don't have to fight. You don't have to do that. We'll help you be safe at school. So that was one thing. Just the lower level human needs of safety and nutrition. And then, do you have all the stuff you need to have school? So there's money to provide. Make sure nobody has to beg for paper, pencils, dictionaries, and all that stuff. So you've got the stuff that you need.
Right. That's key. Yeah.
And then the next thing would be, in many cases, you get kids in classrooms and then watch to see if you had a good match between teacher and student. And a lot of times we had to make changes because sometimes it just wasn't a good match for whatever reason. Kid acted up over here, move him over here, he's fine. And so there's a lot of that watching and protecting. We had amigo programs where teachers would have a child or two, every adult for that matter, we'd identify those kids who were kind of off the wall for whatever reason and say, okay, you know, that's gonna be the one you watch. Check on them when they come in. Did you get your homework? That's a major thing. Did you do your homework? For some reason, in some homes, middle class mainly, you know, there are these routines. They come from school, you have a little snack, you sit down, you do your homework. We check it together, we have dinner, or you have scouts, then we have dinner, or you have dinner, then we have church, or what. But if there are those routines, and by such and such a time, you have your bath and you go to bed.
Right.
And with a lot of our kids who are impoverished, there's none of that. There's just none of that. If there are no routines, some of them are taking care of themselves, or some of them are up watching television, and it's just the way it is. And so it's teaching that, okay, you have to be resilient. You know, you go home. Where do you do your homework? And before you leave to get on the bus, do you have your homework? Do you have paper? Do you have pencil? Do you have everything you need? A real handicap for some of those kids was project work, because we'd have big science fairs and big Kentucky history fairs where they had to do a lot of projects at home, and they came back and the parents did them. I mean, fabulous log cabins that, the logs were just perfect. And
everything lined up.
Oh, yeah. And, of course, the little kids who didn't have that kind of thing at home couldn't even get the poster board. So we started buying the display boards, keeping those at school. So if you need a display board, you can get it. Because where are you going to get it? You know, if you don't have a shopping center nearby that has a hobby shop, or your father's candy, because some of them would come in wood with hinges and just beautiful lettering and all that. So to some extent, to not a great extent, we were working on this. We were trying to get time during the school day so the kids could do their projects at school who could not do them at home.
Right.
And for that matter, my goal was to have all the kids do them at school, because then we knew that, that were the kids' projects. But then a philosophy is family working together on projects. I mean, so, you know, sometimes it's good. You want the family to work with the children on certain projects, not on all of them. So anyway, trying to provide that kind of help, trying to find those kids who had gifts, art, for instance, or music, or so that they could do other things, so we would have talent shows, send buses for the parents to come in, or sometimes I would just keep the kids after school until the show started, feed them, and they just stayed there, and then we took them home, because sometimes once they get home, they can't get back for these evening shows. So it's on and on and on, and I guess if you talk to a group of principals, they will be able to, you know, they could just list all kinds of ideas for trying to help the kids.
I'm just gonna throw in another disc.